Hey, this is Mark Stein with a special edition of Mark at the Movies. Celebrating one of the last great MGM musicals, Bing Crosby, Grace Kelly, Frank Sinatra, Celeste Holm, and Louis Armstrong in High Society.
Bing Crosby speaking from Hollywood. I just dropped in here for a minute to say a few words about some songs. They're in a new film that I've recently completed. Maybe you've heard about it. It's called High Society. This is a Cole Porter score, and I know that many times you've heard them say this is the greatest score by Irving Berlin, or this is the greatest score by Cole Porter, or this is the greatest score by George Gershwin. But when you see the picture, I hope that you agree with me that this music is really in the groove. That's what they used to say when I was a lad around the pool room.
I have heard among this clan, you are called a forgotten man.
Is that what they're saying?
Well, did you ever?
What a swell party this is.
And have you heard the story of a boy, a girl, unrequited love?
Sounds like pure soap opera.
I may cry.
Tune in tomorrow. What a swell party this is. What frails, what frocks,
what broads,
what furs,
what rocks.
They're beautiful. Why, I've never seen such gaiety.
Neither did I.
It's all just too exquisite, really.
This French champagne.
Domestic.
So good for the brain. That's what I was gonna say.
You know, you're a brilliant fellow.
Thank you.
Drink up, Jack. Please don't eat that glass, my friend.
Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra singing together on the big screen for the very first time. And what a swellegant, elegant party it was, even if Bing's not entirely precise pronunciation of risque must have mildly irked Cole Porter. High Society was based on a hit play by Philip Barry, The Philadelphia Story. It opened on Broadway in 1939 and starred Katharine Hepburn, Joseph Cotten, Van Heflin and Shirley Booth, which is a pretty good cast. Miss Hepburn had the film rights, so the following year she made the screen version with Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart and Ruth Hussey, which is a pretty spectacular cast. It belonged to that genre, popular at the time, in which a couple divorce, romance other parties and then reunite and remarry. 16 years after the movie of the Philadelphia Story, MGM decided to remake it as a musical. So the Philadelphia Story became a Newport, Rhode Island story set against the backdrop of the Newport Jazz Festival, with Bing Crosby as a jazz-loving socialite still in love with his ex-wife, played by Grace Kelly. Meanwhile, a couple of scuzzy, low-life gossip rag reporters are hanging around hoping for the inside scoop on the High Society shenanigans. Don't worry about that. The plot need not detain us long. But if you're that interested, Louis Armstrong lays it all out in Cole Porter's opening number, set on the band bus. He's going to play for his former pal, who runs the local jazz festival. But unfortunately, the guy's ex-wife has started a new affair, and now the silly chick is going to marry a square.
Just dig that scenery floating by. We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island. We've been for years in variety. Charlie Knickerbocker, now we're going to be in high, so high society, high society. Yes, I wanna play for my former pal. He runs the local jazz festival. His name is Dexter and he's good news. But something kind of tells me that boy is nice in the blues. In high society, high society. High society, high society, high society. He's got the blues 'cause his former wife begins tomorrow a brand new life. She started lately a new affair, and now the silly chick is gonna marry her square.
High society.
But Brother Dexter, just trust your sat. Stop that wedding and kill that match. Toot my trumpet to start the fun, and play in such a way that you'll come back to your son. And
high society. High society. In high.
Can you dig old Satchmo swinging in the beautiful high society?
At which point the plot begins and complications ensue. Directed by Charles Walters, High Society isn't regarded as a match for the Philadelphia Story when it comes to wit and sparkling dialogue, but oh, that Cole Porter score, arranged by Nelson Riddle, and the combination of talent brought together to perform it. Armstrong, Crosby, Sinatra, Grace Kelly in her final film role before marrying Prince Rainier and retiring from show business. Most of the cast died comparatively young. Louis Armstrong in 1971, Bing in 1977, Princess Grace in 1982. But I did get to sit down a long time back with Celeste Holm, who was Sinatra's gal pal in the movie. They were the two sleazy paparazzi, as we'd now say, intruding on the high society nuptials. Miss Holm created the role of Ado Annie in Oklahoma on Broadway, and she won an Oscar for the film Gentleman's Agreement. But her history with Cole Porter goes back before either of those two hits, as she explained to me many years ago.
Well, what happened was kind of interesting. When I first wanted to go onto the stage, I'd never met Cole Porter, but my mother was a good friend of his aunt's. So, between the two of them, they cooked up an arrangement for me to come and audition for Cole. Well, I was very shy. And he was seemed to be the absolute ultimate sophisticate. And when you're 16, you want to be sophisticated, but of course you miss it by a Chinese mile. So I arrived at the theater, the Broadhurst Theater, which is a large musical house. And he was in the theater all alone, except for an accompanist. And so I had brought a piece of music. Why I chose this piece of music, I will never know. A sultry song.
You go to my head, and you linger like a haunting refrain. And I find you spinning round in my brain. Like the bubbles in a glass of champagne. You go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise. Like a summer with a thousand jewels. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes.
I mean, what the hell did I know about sultry? And so I started to sing, and this is the way it sounded. You go to my head, and that makes my temperature rise. I can't even remember the lyrics. Something with a thousand goodbyes. I'm a something dying by your eyes. And suddenly, Mr. Porter came flying down the aisle and said, Celeste, dear girl, rehearse. Keep working. Keep studying. Keep singing. And maybe one day I'll write a song for you. And of course he did. In high society. Who wants to be a millionaire? I don't.
Who wants uranium to spare?
I don't.
Who wants to journey on a gigantic yacht?
Do I want a yacht? Oh, how I do not. Who wants a fancy foreign car?
I don't.
Who wants to tire of caviar?
Who wants a marble swimming pool too?
I don't.
And I don't, cause all I want is you.
Well, don't forget I'd also done a picture called The Tender Trap with him just before. So it was practically, I had the same dressing room, and it was just a kind of continuum. So we were together for about 6 months, going from one picture to another.
Tender Tramp, Frank Sinatra winds up proposing both to Celeste Holm and then to Debbie Reynolds, while Frank's best pal, David Wayne, provides further complications. It's not a musical, so Miss Holm doesn't get to duet with Sinatra because there's just the famous title song. However, all four of the principals did get a slice of this brand new number as the story ends. In order, David Wayne, Celeste Holm, Debbie Reynolds, and Frank Sinatra.
You see a pair of laughing eyes,
and suddenly you're sighing sighs.
You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, then snap.
Vum, 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 vum.
You wonder how it all came about.
It's too late now, there's no getting out.
You fell in love, and love.
The Tender Trap and High Society had the same director, and the chemistry between Celeste Holm and Frank Sinatra in the first film led MGM to conclude that they ought to have a duet in the second film. Hence, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
I was working with Chuck Walters, and he had also directed The Tender Trap just prior to that. So we had a couple of weeks of rehearsal beforehand where we would rehearse the numbers and the scenes. And, of course, we rehearsed that great big wedding present number, which was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And they had this L-shaped table filled with, U-shaped table covered with all of these magnificent silver numbers, including a spoon, which neither of us could understand. As a matter of fact, there was in the theaters, they had a contest as to who could figure out what that spoon was for. I've forgotten now, but I did know at one time. And anyway, Frank and I worked out all that choreography ourselves. The point is, they made a band tape with the orchestra of the song, and so then we worked it out with the stuff. Then after we'd worked it all out, Chuck Walters came and said, yes, I like that, And okay, so then we sang to our own recording. We sang it live in that rehearsal hall to the band. Then when we actually shot it, we sang back to the tape.
Wants to be a millionaire?
I don't.
Have flashy flunkies everywhere?
I don't.
Who wants the bother of a country estate?
A country estate is something I'd hate.
Who wants to wallow in champagne?
I don't.
Who wants a supersonic plane?
I don't.
Who wants a private landing field too?
I don't.
And I don't,
cause all I want is you.
I remember Helen Rose saying to me a couple of years after the picture was made, I hope you've forgiven me for those costumes. I said, well, I thought they were absolutely right for the part. Well, she said, you know, the front office insisted that I make you look frumpy. I said, of course. I was playing a newspaper woman. And they wanted me to look like that. I mean, I shouldn't have been a glamour girl in that. And she said, well, you certainly weren't. I said, I know.
Well, I don't know. You see, I wouldn't have called them frumpy. But and I think the other thing, of course.
Well, they were not really chic. I mean, you know, the hat was a little wrong, just the wrong angle, and the suit was a little too something, and my evening dress was a disaster, but that's all right. That's what they wanted, and I knew it, so that didn't bother me. But it was a delicious picture to me.
Wants to be a millionaire?
I do.
Wants uranium to spare?
I do.
Wants to journey on a gigantic yacht?
Do I want a yacht? Oh, how I do not. Who wants a fancy foreign car?
I don't.
Who wants to tire of caviar?
Mm-hmm. Who wants a marble swimming pool too?
I don't.
And I don't, cause all I want is you.
And I got a chance to sing all kinds of funny ways in that. It was great fun.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
I don't.
And go to every swell affair. Who wants to ride behind a liveried chauffeur?
A liveried chauffeur? Do I want?
No, sir.
Who wants an opera box, I'll bet?
I don't. And sleep through Wagner at the Met.
I don't. Who wants to corner Cartier's too?
I don't.
And I don't. Cause all I want is you.
I didn't quite ask Celeste Holm who wants to be a millionaire, but I did ask whether she could relate to the situation she and Frank were singing about not wanting the trappings of material success.
Nobody goes into this business to make money. At least I can't imagine anyone in his right mind going into our business to make money. If you happen to fall by accident or something into a television series that works, you do make quite a bit of money. At the same time, very often, the amount of money is in direct and opposite relationship to the perception of that show.
Yes.
So you have to make choices. Well, it was a delightful picture. I mean, the constant presence of the Louis Armstrong and his band provided a kind of background of fun that continued all through it.
Hey, Pops, you want to grab a little of what's left here?
Yeah, Daddy, yeah.
Here we go. If you sail,
I sailing
over the sea,
or when you wait for me,
take my tip, they're all moldo hip in Italy.
Well, Alvaroducci, as for France,
oh, I know you're very big there.
Yes, believe it or not,
I do believe, I do indeed.
The Frenchman's all prefer what they call leges high.
Fold me down, take a plane,
oh, Barbadozat,
go to Siam,
Baba,
in Bangkok today, round the clock, oh, well, they all like to jam. Indians on the Amazon, beat one bar and all of them are,
oh, well, gone, man, gone.
From the equator up to the pole, everybody winging, everybody singing that rock, 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 rock and roll. From the east to the west, from the coast to the coast, jazz is king, jazz is the thing the folks dig most. Now that's jazz.
The thing is that we had these tremendous talents all working at the same time. And I think, of course, that they stimulated each other.
Have you heard about Dear Blanche? got run down by an avalanche.
No.
Don't worry, she's a game girl, you know. Got up and finished fourth.
This kid's got guts.
Having a nice time? Grab a line.
Have you heard that Mimsy Star?
Oh, what now?
She got pinched in the Astor Bar.
Sauced again, eh?
She was stoned.
Well, did you ever?
Never.
What a swell party this is.
It's great.
Ah, oh, it's great.
It's grand.
So grand.
It's wonderland. La 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 la.
We sing.
We sing.
So rare.
So rare.
Like old Camembert.
Like Baba.
Don't dig that kind of crooning, chum.
Actually, he did dig it a lot. But what do you write for the two greatest popular singers of the age to sing together in their first ever big screen duet? Cole Porter found the assignment something of a challenge. And then the film's director, Charles Walters, had a thought. Before he became a movie director, he had had a modest performing career of his own. And he'd been in the 1939 Cole Porter Broadway hit, Du Barry Was a Lady. And in that show, he and Betty Grable had introduced a song called Well Did You Ever. And so an obscure Betty Grable-Charles Walters duet was retooled into a world-famous Bing Crosby-Frank Sinatra hit.
Have you heard it's in the stars? Next July we collide with Mars. Well, did you ever? What a swell party, a swell party, a swell elegant, elegant party this is.
I drink to your health.
Nah, let's drink to your wealth.
You're my bon ami.
Hey, that's French.
A liberty
fraternity. Have you heard it's in the stars? Next July we collide with Mars. Well, did you ever? What a swell party. Swell party. Swell elegant, elegant party. This is.
I think the freedom to feel and express feeling has grown with the work of the Actors Studio. At the same time, I think we have lost disciplines in style.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all awfully good at scratching our bottoms and don't mind doing it.
Yes.
Or taking our clothes off. But when it comes to putting our clothes on and looking comfortable in them, if the youngsters now have not been trained to do that at all. They just look as if they'd come to a costume party and weren't quite sure whether they were all buttoned up in the back.
that's very true.
Style sense, yes. That they are not taught. Which yeah. They should be, how to stand and how to sit and how to behave.
Well, it's an inelegant age, so perhaps we shouldn't be too surprised that something like that happens.
Well, it's pretty unattractive, I think. Yeah. The unmade bed syndrome.
In the heavens, stars are dancing, and the mounting moon is new. What a rare night for romancing, my
And if I make love to you, since the dear day of our meeting, I've wanted to tell you all I long to do. Dawn is nearing, time is fleeting. Mind if I make love to you? If you let me, I'll endeavor to persuade you I'm your party for two. And from then on, you will never mind if I make love to you. Mind if I make love to you?
Frank and Bing divided up the love songs to Grace Kelly, but when it came to a spot for a song sung to a little kid, they gave that one to Crosby. How's this for a Cole Porter rhyme? Little one, no controversy. You're my downfall, you're my Circe, as in Circe, the Greek goddess of enchantment. I wonder if little Lydia Reed, who was 11 years old at the time they filmed this, had a clue what that meant. Louis Armstrong's trumpet sets the scene.
Oh, let me see now, oh, little one, I was so gloomy, felt that life sure would undo me, till one day you happened to me, my little one. Here now, little one, no controversy. You're my downfall, you're my Circe. I'm a good guy, show me mercy, my little one.
When you look back on it, did the sort of on-screen relationships, because it looked with Bing Crosby, of course, with that sort of casual style.
Dear man, lovely man to work with.
Yes. Was he as easy as
yes.
he appears?
Oh, yes. Mm. Really. No, I think, you know, I was watching Cagney and Lacey last night, which I think is so well done. Do you know it? It's a wonderful show. And we were absolutely held by it last night. The producer said to me, you know, Celeste, you must realize something. When you start out to do a series, if you're going to do a series, you must understand that you better play as close to yourself as you can. Because when you have been playing for 38 weeks, when you've been doing 38 weeks of shows, by the time Friday night comes, you are so tired that what comes out is you.
Mm.
And I say, understand that. I understand that. And I think that's quite true.
Mm.
And of course, the screen has always been the most, depending upon the director, but can be the most loving exposure of a person in the world.
And that's obviously true in the case of someone like Bing Crosby.
Yes, but you see, he started as a singer. He started singing as himself.
Yes.
The closest thing he ever came to a characterization, I guess, was when he played a Catholic priest in something.
Yes, or in The Country Girl, which I think he did
just
before.
That's true. That's quite true. But up to that time, he had never considered himself or taken himself seriously as an actor. And by the way, I don't think anybody should.
the matter? And my love will never die. Remember Samantha, I'm a one girl guy. Together Samantha, we could ride a star and ride it high. Remember Samantha, I'm a one-girl guy. And if some distant day you decided to say, get along, go away, goodbye, remember I'm a one-gal guy. Remember Samantha, I'm a one-girl guy.
Many people regard it, with the exception of Gigi, as the sort of last great film musical. And it's also one of the few with any genuine or kind of wit, I think, in the screenplay.
Yes.
A lot of people said it wasn't as good as the Philadelphia Story. But
I don't think it was, really, because they had to cut out too much stuff to get the songs in.
Yes.
And the sort of rapid-fire wit that took place in the original script was so wonderful. Because the moment you put music in it, it sort of gives a relaxation to it that the other didn't have.
Yes, unless the songs are, I mean, it is a
They're wonderful, song. Oh, certainly.
Were you ever a bit disappointed because you got what is regarded, I mean, people normally say the duets are the things people remember about high society. They remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, they remember Well Did You Ever, they remember Now You Has Jazz. But do you regret?
And they remember True Love.
Oh, yes. That's
which has become a standard.
Yes.
And the least Cole Porter song that was ever written.
Suntan, wind blown, honeymooners at last alone, feeling far above par. Oh, how lucky we are, while I give to you. And you give to me true love, so on and on it'll always be true love, true. For you and I,
have a guardian angel on high with nothing to do but to give to you and to give to me love forever.
For you and I have a guardian angel on high with nothing to do. And then that sort of huge long pause. I'm sure that was very much something he must have dashed off because it's so untypical.
I loved it.
For you and I have a guardian angel on high with nothing to do. To give to you and to give to me love forever true. Love forever
Frank Sinatra. And just like Bing, I think that Cole Porter has outdone himself with his score for High Society. And incidentally, it's the first he's done expressly for a motion picture in more than 10 years. They're all fine, wonderful tunes he's written, with the bright and witty lyrics we've come to expect from Mr. Porter. I know I enjoyed singing my songs in the picture, and I think Crosby, Grace Kelly, and Celeste Holm and Satchmo Armstrong did too. I team with Bing in a number called Well, Did You Ever? That we have a lot of fun with. I hope you like that one. But my own particular favorite is a sentimental ballad called You're Sensational. I sing it to Miss Kelly in the picture and it sort of melts her. You understand what I mean? Maybe it'll have the same effect on you.
I've no proof when people say you're more or less aloof. But you're sensational. I don't care if you are called the fair Miss Frigidaire, 'cause you're sensational, making love is quite an art. What you require is the proper squire to fire your heart. And if you say that one fine day you'll let me come to call, we'll have a ball, 'cause you're sensational, sensational, that's all.
I don't care if you are called the fair Miss Frigidaire. Grace Kelly was a famously glacial blonde, and there was a fair amount of truth in that Cole Porter couplet. On set, Sinatra was apparently attracted to her, but told Bing that he feared rejection, which I can't imagine happened very often. But High Society was to prove Miss Kelly's last film, because the fair Miss Frigidaire had finally found the proper squire to fire her heart. Celeste Holm again.
We were working, of course, with Grace Kelly, who was so beautiful and so dear, and who, well, you know, I remember one time I asked her, are you going to the Red Book Awards tonight? This is when the awards began to proliferate, and the Red Book Award was another one. So we were going to the party, and I asked Grace if she was going. Yes, she was going. I said, well, she said, unless I have an early call, which it means it's out of the question. If you have an early call the next morning, you have to go to bed at 9 o'clock or you're a wreck for the next day because you have to be out there so early. And so I said, who are you going with? And she said, my prince. And I thought, oh, of course. The rest of us all say, someday my prince will come. But within her case, it really happened. So she didn't go, as it turned out, neither did I, because we both had early calls. But then there was the day that she came on the set. And she said to Chuck Walters, may I wear my own engagement ring? And he said, well, I don't know, let's see it. Well, it was, she came in with what looked like a skating ring. I mean, it was really beautiful. Mm. It was the most beautiful diamond I've ever seen because it had so many colors in it. Most diamonds are very cold. Mm. And I loved it. I thought it was marvelous. So she wore the engagement ring. And if you look very quickly and you look very carefully, you'll be able to see what that ring looked like. And then, of course, she was very much to herself because at that moment, she was really trying to make up her mind whether or not to marry this man and become the princess of a small monarchy.
For you and I have a guardian angel on high with nothing to do but to give to you and to give
Celeste Holm enormously, but she didn't suffer fools gladly. Here she is correcting the sloppy English of my younger self.
In the 1940s, though, it was a tremendously exciting time because you did have shows like Oklahoma, like Lady in the Dark, like...
You mean Bloomer, such as, like, you don't mean like.
Yes, I mean...
You see, here you use the adverbial sense, not the adjectival sense.
Well, I mean, all I can say in defense is that I always...
I thought
went out in...
Well, not in this country, actually.
Well,
we don't use them interchangeably.
Right.
I say as if, yes. Not like.
Well, I take your point.
Yes, I realize now what you mean.
Yes.
Well, that's telling me. We kept in touch, and I saw a couple of years later in, I think, somewhere like Nottingham or Leicester in the English Midlands, when she asked me along to an evening she was appearing in. It was on these Night of 100 Stars type galas where... There were like 7 stars, and then they have to find 93 other people to make up the bill. And at that point, Celeste Holm was not really a star to a British audience of the 1980s. She was like a lot of people that if you explained what she'd been in, or said she sings with Frank Sinatra in High Society, or she won an Oscar for Gentleman's Agreement, people would go, oh, yeah, I know her. But she taught me a very important lesson on that show, because she walked out like a star, and so the audience treated her like a star. She walked out and she raised her arms to acknowledge applause that hadn't yet begun, and because she'd raised her arms, they began applauding. And she took all the time she wanted to walk to the center of the stage, milking this applause that grew and grew as she came out. And that was a very useful lesson to learn, and one that actually an amazing number of actors and actresses and singers and so forth never learn, that if you come on like a star, they'll treat you like a star. It's actually a pretty good rule. By then, she and Frank Sinatra were the only two high society stars still around. Princess Grace was just 52 when she died in a car crash on the Grand Corniche near Monte Carlo. Here she is at the Royal Festival Hall in 1970, introducing Frank Sinatra and reminiscing about their only film together.
Frank and I made one film together, High Society. Where I even had the nerve to sing a song. Of course, I was slightly supported by Bing Crosby. And that reminds me of a story. I suppose I can tell it. One time, Frank was in Monaco for a benefit for children, and he came to visit us, and there, proudly displayed, was a golden disc. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but if a song sells over 1 million copies, the company gives you a golden disc. And when Frank saw that, he said, "Whose is that?" And I said, "Mine." He said, "How did you get that?" I said, "High Society." He said, "Well, I was in that picture and I didn't get one." Then he turned to my husband, he said, "How do you like that? She opens her mouth once and gets a golden record, and I've been knocking myself out for 20 years and don't have one." Of course, that was long before Strangers in the Night and the many others that followed. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Frank Sinatra.
Making love is quite an art. What you require is the proper squire to fire your heart. And if you say that one fine day you'll let me come to call, we'll have a ball. 'Cause you're a sensational, that's all, that's all, that's all.
Bing Crosby, Grace Kelly, Frank Sinatra, Celeste Holm, Louis Armstrong, Cole Porter, Nelson Riddle. It didn't seem such a big deal in the mid-1950s, but it was, indeed, pretty sensational.
It was in that film High Society that a pretty fair songwriter named Cole Porter gave me this lovely song. I've no proof when people say you're more or less aloof, but you're sensational. And if you say that one fine day you'll let me come to call, we'll have a ball. 'Cause you're sensational. You're sensational. That's all. That's all. That's all.
And like Frank says, dots all. See you next time.